Welcome to the seminar on Art and Mind. Our speaker today is Francis Steen. 2 weeks ago, he talked about cognitive adaptations of art, and today he's going to talk. He's going to give us the second part, which is cognitive functions of Paleolithic art. Francis?
Morning. I will start with a very brief recap of the last talk, two or three slides. I see most of you here. I'll be talking about this adaptationist framework in terms of an adaptive problem and cognitive design, and then I'll go to various proposed functions of Paleolithic cave art, the European cave art.
You might want to speak up a little.
Yes. Appa. All right. And I'll be considering three different functions: an aesthetic function, simulation or virtual reality function, and imaginative immersion, or what you might call mental state modeling function. Within the adaptationist perspective, you'd get questions such as, how do we acquire the capacity to conceive of and execute works of art? Why do we have the motivation to invest in, enjoy, celebrate works of art? And what are the cognitive results in terms of the long-term effects of artists begin there? Now, the hypothesis, briefly, is that the motivation to engage in artistic behaviors is a result of cognitive adaptations for self-construction. And the effect that art has on us, I'll be proposing then, is a consequence of the design of these adaptations. The capacities, on the other hand, that enable us to construct works of art have a broader origin, not simply in self-construction. Challenges to self-construction, essentially the complex cognitive, physiological, behavioral adaptations that that evolution has produced. Let me move this one just a tiny bit that way. Are partly encoded in the genome, but much of the information will need to be in the environment. So if you have a stable environment, there is no incentive, to put it that way, for natural selection to attempt to put everything into the genome. Self-construction, then, consists in those activities that promote the infant's, or the small animal's motoric, perceptual, emotional, conceptual organization. And these, I suggest, take place in a distinct cognitive frame, an organizational frame, and they are distinct from executive mode type activities that relate to survival and reproduction. Now, three central types of self-construction: sensation seeking, connected with the aesthetic, practice in a simulated environment, connected to play and eventually with the imagination, and then fiction, which has at its core the construction of the virtual agent. Sensations can give rise to a subjective phenomenology that the experience is intrinsically enjoyable. The effect is non-discriminate. There are certain kinds of objects that we find particularly enjoyable. And the pleasures of art, in other words, what we find enjoyable in art, is an index of the adaptations that underlie it. Am I in your way here again? So, let me angle this a little bit. Now, as I proposed last time, the aesthetic is a much older phenomenon than art. Nature is, in this perspective, the original aesthetic object. This is the type of complexity that is suitable for training the infants, the small animals' perceptual systems. So any visual system that's not simply feature-driven, as in frogs, you get certain responses for looming, for yellow jackets, for flies, but any system that that creates a an overall perceptual image of the world would benefit from an aesthetic impulse. Now, art then presupposes the aesthetic in this view, but the aesthetic doesn't necessitate art. You don't necessarily get art even if you have an aesthetic impulse. Secondly, simulation generation, mammalian brains, this appears to be an early mammalian adaptation, the ability to generate simulations. You get it first in dreams, which is a mammalian adaptation. You also get very simple types of it in play. It's a little difficult to know the extent to which this involves mental imagery. My own preference would be to say that we have no particular reason to think that it does. It does, however, involve simulation activities in the sense of objects standing for other objects and acting out a particular scenario. Humans, of course, are capable of full-scale waking dreaming, and this is in part made possible by the more sophisticated source monitoring system. So in order to have waking simulations, you need to be able to distinguish between what is produced by the mind and what appears externally through perception. Of course, if you look at the brain, this would be very difficult to see. In other words, we have very strong sense that the perceptual world is external to us, but of course any neurological theory would have to say this is being generated inside the brain. Imaginative immersion, you have then the creation of fictions where people adopt the agent registers, the memories of an agent in a specific situation that is not your actual agent situation, and use their bodies, minds, emotions to simulate a different individual or oneself in a different situation. Now, my suggestion is that this appears first in play, but of course we use it massively in understanding others, in planning, in other words, projecting ourselves into the future, imagining ourselves in a situation that has not yet arisen. And fiction solves a major problem, how to practice complex behavior in the absence of the actual situation. So in pretend play, cheap and plentiful features of the environment can be enlisted to train strategies for events that are rare, that are dangerous, and involve expensive resources. And this is accomplished through the creation of distinct frames, in other words, an organizational frame and an executive frame, and within the organizational frame, blended spaces that incorporate various elements of internal structure and external perception.